Eretz Yisrael. And guess what? We are here in the Holy Land at America's one and only Jewish Moments in the Morning radio program, heard on listener-sponsored digital radio around the world, the web at NahumSiegel.com and the Nahum Siegel Network, and of course on the beloved NSN app. And we are at Nefesh B'Nefesh headquarters in Jerusalem, Israel. And we're taking the opportunity, since we're visiting Israel and Jerusalem, to speak with our good friend, the co-founder of Nefesh B'Nefesh, Rabbi Yehoshua Fass, who, trust me, is taking a slice of his very busy Tuesday schedule to join us at JMAM. Hence, the reason I'm not implementing his theme song for today, because it takes up too much valuable time.
Bless you.
There was never a time you liked it. Even at the beginning, you didn't like the whole theme song thing.
No, I love Lenny and I love the song.
But it's overdoing it, doing it every time you're on.
I think so.
Right, so you see, we've taken your advice so much.
It's a beautiful thing. Thank you.
So you owe me a mazel tov, because
mazel tov.
A few days ago, right here at Nefesh B'Nefesh headquarters, you were able to celebrate with many new Olim, including Tamima and Yehoshua Siegel, who are now residents of Jerusalem, who I visited. Trust me, I know this is going to sound nuts. I visited at 4 a.m. this morning.
Mm-hmm.
It was a jet game on.
Of course.
It's hard to shake that habit, you know what I mean? You can move to Israel. It doesn't mean you can eliminate everything that you grew up with in the United States. You know what I'm saying? And trust me, when I was first considering Aliyah in my 20s, when I was first considering it, there was no option of keeping the sports, you know, available to one, the spectator sports available to one on a regular basis.
And that was the only thing holding you back.
I would say if I made a list at that time in my early 20s, it was on the list. I don't know if it was the only thing holding me back.
Okay.
It was on the list. But I want to tell you something interesting. And again, thank you for celebrating with them on this end.
They're adorable.
Thank you.
Absolutely
thank you
adorable.
Much. As you know, we celebrated with them on the other end. I sent you the invitation to the Kiddush that we made, et cetera.
Yes.
But here's the difference. And I wonder if you'll agree with this observation. In Newark Airport on the Tuesday when they left, it was a celebratory scene for obvious reasons, but I did think it would be more emotional than it was, especially, you know, I of course came here a few days later, so mm-hmm. It wasn't a terrible separation, but there were others there, siblings, etc., who, you know, they don't know the next time they're going to see him, you know, aside from FaceTime. You know, they don't know when their next trip to Israel is or when he's expected to come back to the United States with Tamima, etc., etc. And I'm saying to myself, this is not nearly as emotional a scene as when we gather in Kennedy Airport and there are hundreds of Olim for a charter flight. And I said to myself, you know, it might just be, and I'm so curious your reaction to this, it might just be that there's such a mall effect. There is such an overwhelming, avalanche of emotions at the charter flight, because at the charter flight, every Olé or Ola has, I don't know what the average is. It's got to be 5-6 people, right, who come to the airport to see them, an average for each one. And there are many of those who get so emotional, and they really are, you know, just
feeds off of the other.
And that's what I'm wondering.
No, let's. I've been analyzing this summer.
Oh, I love doing this with you.
Full analysis of the summer. We had 14 group flights. The last one is September 18th, next week, please God. And it's been remarkable. Remarkable to every few days, another group, another group, another group. And first of all, I think a lot of families and friends did not come out to the airport because they realized it wasn't a charter flight farewell ceremony.
No big celebration.
And most of the tears and the hugs happen back at home.
Right. At the Kiddush's.
Exactly. Right. So that created a calmer, actually, environment. And it's interesting. We try to create some hoopla here on the Israel side. And for the Olim, some Olim loved it.
Right.
Loved the calmness and the ability to process quickly at JFK or Newark. The ability to have 50, 60 people instead of 200 people. Personal care from our staff. A disproportionate amount of staff per Olé.
Right.
And I think a lot of our staff felt good that they really were able to hold the hand of a family, of an individual, through the entire process until they got to the cab. From Newark JFK mm-hmm. all the way to the end. And there was a real sense of fulfillment. I asked the staff afterwards, after each group, what did you feel? And they're like, no, it was amazing. I had my family and brought them through it. But there was something missing. The big momentous event, or the climactic pinnacle of the summer. But I just we just prepared a a video just summing up the entire summer. And it's remarkable, just the 14th. It's very beautifully done. It looks like the summer was extremely, extremely busy. We had 2,000 Olim that made Aliyah during these 14 group flights. And in a time like now, and it's really, it was very inspiring for all of us. And I obviously for the Olim themselves, very emotional for them. But despite it all, and despite what our country is experiencing, it was just a ray of light and very much appreciated, welcomed, valued, embraced by Israel, by Israeli press. And it was felt.
Yeah, the press did pay a lot more attention.
It was interesting. It was every week that I'm going doing my Shabbat errands, I'm going around. Oh, you know, we saw it on Thursday night. We saw it on the last night's news. You know, which so it was the regular Israeli was really in tune to this wave of Aliyah. Summing back, we needed to not have a charter flight this summer, right. because we were in a state of war, army, El Al. All the factors were asking us not to, were advising us not to. But next year, please God.
You didn't need a high-profile event that the whole world would know about.
It was not that. It was not a security issue. It was the opposite, is because things were so volatile and things from day to day changed with airlines. The last thing I needed to have...
I know it.
100%. Right. The last thing I needed to have... is to put 350 Ooh. People up in a hotel without any knowledge of when I can fly them here.
Right.
50, 60, 70 is Herculean, manageable.
Right.
And that was the recommendation. Recommendation is this is not because it's a target, not because the whole world was speaking about. No, Andrew, that was actually an incentive to go ahead and do it.
Right, because I wondered why it was different than previous wars.
It was just being able to manage it during this time when airlines were canceling day in.
I think Tamima and Yoshua were on the side of they liked the calmer thing as compared to
the
hoopla and celebration. In fact, it was funny because now that Tamima has made Aliyah three times, almost as much as her father-in-law.
Next summer, the fourth.
As I joked with her. Yes. No, she'll be here.
I know.
But I did say I'm in competition with her in terms of Aliyah flights. But anyway, funny enough, she made Aliyah during the war when there was no Correct. Celebration here. And then again, of course, as we just said, it was a much more toned-down situation in the airport this time around. So what a success. 2,000 is just an amazing number. And you sit here at the end of the summer doing all these reviews and, you know, kicking off another season. We know that you're off to, you know, other countries, including at some point the United States, to do more recruiting and to do special medical programs, mm-hmm. et cetera. By the way, is Israel today the beneficiary of all this? Are there more doctors now?
Yeah, we're just touching the sense
of the fruits of your labor.
It's remarkable. This year has been, with launching the International Medical Aliyah Program in March. March 10th is when we launched it. And since then, since New Jersey, France, Buenos Aires, London next week, we have a delegation going to Brazil and Kiev just to do prep work. Planning Australia.
Kiev.
Yes.
You could do it now.
We're not going to talk about that, but
no,
yes.
No, I'm saying, but
yes.
It's doable.
Yeah.
And there are doctors there.
Yes.
Ready to come to Israel.
Yes. And Australia, South Africa. This is the next several months are, I think I'm spending more time flying to international
Right. Are you going to go to Australia?
Oh, yeah. Of course. Please, God. That's 2025. And Los Angeles... In this year, we have Los Angeles in December. So it's remarkable to meet different Jews in different communities. It's incredible to see the expression of solidarity. It's incredible to see the interest of individuals who want to build their future and contribute their talents in Israel. It's been an eye-opener. It's been inspirational. I'm using that word too many times in this conversation.
No, I hear it.
But it's incredible to see an idea develop over years and then being taken on the road and being expanded. And at the same time, we are juggling a bunch of other exciting, massive programs that we're about to launch over the next few weeks.
That we're not familiar with yet?
That you are not
lone soldiers?
That you're not familiar with and on a scope that is just remarkable for the organization. Requiring us to really create a five-year model plan of where we're going to be. Over the last several months, the government and other agencies have taken notice and how successful we're able to pivot with the International Medical Aliyah Program, and especially the needs that are required post October 7th. So we have been given a lot of opportunities to assess whether or not we wanted to take on different projects. And it's forcing us not only to create a five-year scaffolding or five-year plan, but also almost to pivot from that, you know, that tagline of facilitate, advocate, educate, and celebrate to more of product lines. The Nefesh is an umbrella organization that has Aliyah as a product, has national service as a product, as national development and education, and to build out those four pillars moving forward, because that's the only way to be able to assess and to evaluate these new projects, to create the funding for it, to create the construct or managerial construct to
yeah, well, it's to interesting forward. To me about what you're saying. Obviously, I don't know everything, but you have shared with me in the last few months certain tidbits of information regarding this direction that you're describing. And you and I had an opportunity because of a long car ride that we subjected each other to. And the big benefit was that we had a chance to talk for quite a while. And it was during that car ride where you were able to brainstorm, or at least to tell me about your brainstorming, about some of the things. Do you know when that was?
No.
That was 2 weeks after October 7th.
Wow.
So I'm saying to myself, wow, all of this that you're describing was literally at the height
yeah.
of the war, the tragedy. And that doesn't, none of this ever stops you. Go to 2014, go to any other year, nothing ever stopped you in terms of the summer Aliyah, no matter what the enemy wanted to do up north, up south, Gaza, no matter what. Now, of course, as I just mentioned, you know, October 7th, you had a lot on your mind, and obviously a lot was going through the minds of, and still is, going through the minds of any Israeli and anybody living here. Yet you were still trying to focus on what the big picture is down the road.
Now, thank God, we have a phenomenal staff, passionate, professional, incredibly dedicated and really talented staff. And it gives us the ability to take these dreams and to actualize them and to have the standing with philanthropy and government agencies to trust that when they give us something that we'll be able to execute it and execute it in a significant way. Eyal Katzman, you know, sure. is going to kill me for even saying this, but yesterday, we're opening up, after the Chagim, a new center in Tel Aviv.
Wow, mazal tov.
We took half of the Azrieli Towers sure. in Tel Aviv, so the circular building.
Sure.
So we took half of the circle of the 10th floor, which will be open to the public after the summer. And yesterday we brought the entire staff, the Israeli staff from all over the country, for a staff meeting there for an introduction to this place so that they can see the potential and the partnerships that we're bringing in and a taste of some of the major programming that we're going to be launching to be housed in Tel Aviv as a counterpart to Yerushalayim. And just to see the amount of seats in that ulam of just staff, it gave you a little butterflies in your stomach of just this, the pinch me moment of how far we've grown, but also, oh my God, there's so much staff. but again, the only way they're able to execute these incredible projects is because of their devotion and dedication. And we're very, very lucky.
Rabbi Fass, of course, is here with us. We're at Nefesh B'Nefesh in Jerusalem. Let me go back for a moment to the serious part of what I brought up regarding what I did early this morning. So we talked about the sports example. You analyze this stuff all the time. You didn't just allude to it. You admitted to it earlier in this conversation. How much of this is all because of how easily one can access anything from around the world at this point, and how much of it is even more so because the world has gotten so small? If this would not have happened, and again, I don't know how you stop technology, but, you know, in theory, would it be a much different scene? Is so much of this Aliyah happening because now people really, really do feel? I'll give you an example, by the way. When I think about some of my children, and I'm sure so many other people go through this, you know, moving to Israel while we'll still be in the United States.
Temporarily.
Mm-hmm. I say to myself, thank God there's FaceTime. Now, you know there wasn't FaceTime, right? So thank God I get to see the children and grandchildren because there's such a thing as FaceTime. Is this a major, major factor that we have all these numbers of Olim, or is it?
No, I think it's just a reduction of stress factors and eliminating certain obstacles. I mean, technology has changed every single aspect of our lives. And you can say that with every single endeavor of our lives or every enterprise. Like, what would this look like if we didn't have that? So that's a constant. The constant comparison will be there throughout history. But I think it also raises other challenges. But it eliminates some of that distance or feeling disconnected to your cultural base, your familial base. That definitely bridges the worlds in a very profound way. People can be in touch. Some people have better relationships because they're dafka making from a distance, because they're dafka making a concerted effort of every single day being in touch versus coming by the grandparents' home once every 3 weeks versus really creating a relationship, anecdotally.
Yeah.
But if you get over the time difference, you can enjoy your same sports and your same shows and feel culturally connected. I don't think that's the challenge. And a lot of people, because of what happened in COVID and the whole full transformation of working from one's home and remote work and remote professional output, has profoundly changed that obstacle and hurdle for some individuals.
When's the last time you woke up at 3 a.m. to watch a football game? Or it's never happened? Has it ever happened?
I'm not a sports guy.
So you know, never that. Happened?
No.
Super Bowl? Well,
debates. You can ask me about debates.
Tonight, will you be staying up to watch a debate?
I'll catch it at the end.
The highlights. Yeah. Or as you wake up, you as mean you'll hear, up, right? Yeah. Rabbi Fass with us here at Nefesh V'Nefesh. The list of requirements, let's say 2005. I don't know why I always think about 2005, maybe because that's the year Yigal moved to Israel. Mm. The list of requirements for an Ole couple or an Ole family, for Olim, is it the same today? If you go to the computer, if you go to the website, you're filling out the same form, same number of forms, same everything. Is any of that different today?
It got worse.
Seriously?
No, it's gotten not worse, because certain things, because of technology, going back to technology, yeah, certain things are easier to get.
But the checklist is the same.
No, the checklist got a little bit longer, just a little bit tighter with criminal background checks, which is good for Israel. Certain documentation requiring an apostille or a certain notarization.
And that wasn't like that 18
years ago? No, there were certain things that were looser and lighter, and I think Israel just tightened the screws a little bit, which for society, it's a good thing.
Yeah, who's complaining about that? That's process, the whole visa thing, right?
Yeah, but the process is still doable. I'm just curious
if the volume of stuff changed. Could you explain the visa thing? It's not your department.
Not my department. Not even addressing it.
Do people ask you? No, I don't mean it like that. I'm looking for the practical aspect. When I fly after January 1st, am I going to have to fill out a new form?
I don't think so, but we'll.
Oh, really? So this whole rumor may just.
No,
you know,
well.
It may just go the way of the dodo bird, huh?
Right now being assessed, let's put it that way.
It'll go the way of the real ID in the United States.
We are going to skirt this topic.
In other words, it sounds like you're working hard to help people like me. That's what it sounds like, at least. But I don't know.
When we have something to share, we'll share.
And you don't have to answer this, but I'm just wondering out loud if I don't think it discourages people from traveling. It's just a two-minute process that's, you know, a little bit of a pain in the neck. But again, you don't have to address it. I'm not forcing you to. How about a shout-out? It's now September.
Shout-out to Nachum Siegel.
No, forget me.
Oh.
How about a shout-out now that it's September? And I know that you're not in any way minimizing other communities, but there are certain communities in the United States that have had a great summer. Very often we'll point to some of the communities of New York and New Jersey for obvious reasons, a lot of population, a lot of people moving. We've pointed out, you know, hello Teaneck, hello Bergenfield, and others that are, you know, seem to be a hub for. Give me, outside of New York and New Jersey, who shined this summer, Rabbi Fass? Which community caught your attention like, wow, this city in the United States is sending a lot of Olim to Israel? Is there anybody in particular?
No, I'm not going to say. I'm not going to say it.
Did Cleveland come through?
I'm not going.
Did Dallas come through? Did Portland come through?
I'm dealing with three communities right now that I have to get on a Zoom. I'm showing you my phone. I'm not opening my phone.
Did Denver come through?
I'm not saying.
Did Minnesota have a representation? I mean, tell me. Tell me who.
Habibi.
Tell me who we're saluting today.
The last thing I need today is getting two phone calls from communities saying, why are you saying? I'm not. Thank God there was equal representation across the country,
the 48
obviously
states,
the tri-state area.
The 48 states outside of New York and New Jersey is not one where you would say to me on the air today, wow, that was a nice representation.
Arizona. Say. No, I'm joking.
Did Arizona do well? They had some people.
No, California, the California area had a beautiful representation.
And
Florida.
Did Florida have a good one?
Nice.
Because you know what's happening in Florida. A lot of Jews are moving to Florida.
Yes, they should just stop off at Israel and just have surprise Aliyah and keep them here and then stop over.
Maybe you should speak to the government of the state of Florida. Find out how they're attracting so many Jews.
Maybe there should be a required visa.
No, but I'm saying you can find out the secret of how they're attracting
the secret.
So many
I think
Jews.
We all know what the secret is.
All right, so you're not willing to tell us a state north of the border. You did have a nice Canadian representation.
Mm-hmm.
And the 14 group flights all came from JFK, or there were other
Newark,
cities?
Newark and JFK.
And that's it.
We also had
and
one
otherwise
from
they
Canada.
Connected. Literally
Toronto,
a direct one?
And we had one from L.A., yeah.
Meaning direct, where you mm-hmm. could be part of the group yeah. of 50 to 100 yeah, yeah. people and just, oh, what can I say? What a banner summer. I think of the early days when we wondered what a banner summer would look like, and look what's going on.
Oh, I think the contrast creates the, accentuated the power of the summer and just the beauty of it, the resilience, the solidarity, the courage. I think just the backdrop of just highlighted the superb element of the summer.
Well, what you're alluding to is something that our audience sometimes forgets, because our audience is basically 6,000 miles away from here, and that is that there's still a war going on.
Today I have a meeting, and one of my staff members was called to Gaza this morning. We talked yesterday, preparing for this meeting. It changes from day to day. There's loss, there's PTSD.
Injuries?
Injuries, there's real trauma. We are all exposed to it. People on your block, people that you work with. It's all around us. So I know...
Grandparents losing one or more grandchild?
We know that it's punctuated in the... In American news and in when you go around your day-to-day life and you feel it and you're obsessed with news and you're reading about it, but this is, it's visceral, it's real. We're exposed to it day in and day out. My family has been doing a countdown for weeks for two of my family members to come out of Gaza so they can come back to their kids. So, this is, for me, every morning.
How many days away are we?
Hundreds.
Seriously?
Yeah. I mean, Mamash coming home since October 7th for a few days here and a few days there. People have been in, and that means parents have been worrying sick, wives who have been struggling, kids who miss their parents. It's and that's what we live in. The whole staff is very, very, and to see, and when we heard the horrible news about Hirsch, they were just here. They were just here a week, Hirsch's parents, Rachel and John, were just here a week beforehand speaking to a group upstairs. And it's very real. It's very real. We're worried about the North. We have a lot of Olim who are still out of homes.
Yeah.
So it's a balancing act. We're constantly balancing, dreaming, building, moving forward, trying to inspire, trying to have that smile, trying to attract, trying to integrate, and at the same time, the reality that we're living with, and it's becoming ingrained. We're living this this bi-emotional, experience.
Right, which has always been the case, but in the last 10 months,
it's becoming the new normal, and it's hard.
Why don't we ever get definitive information about the intention of North? I saw another report over the last few days that the Prime Minister had said in a cabinet meeting, this is it, we're going up there and we're going to, you know, make sure that we take action that will lead to our people being able to move back to the North. But
there are consequences.
No, but why make all these public statements then?
I don't know. But this morning, you just missed him. As you were, right when you came into the office, the Director General of the Ministry of Negev and Galil was here today. One of our projects is to help rebuild.
Go south, go north.
Exactly. And what can we do besides bringing physicians to those areas and psychiatrists to those areas? What other critical professions can we do, hopefully, the day after the war? And what does it even look like?
Did he have a timetable?
So it was interesting. I'll share it with you after offline. But it's interesting to see the realistic, the new reality or the realistic expectation of what will look like.
And talk about by emotion, it's probably also by theories, depending on this 100%.
If you go to war, if you don't go to war, right. if there's another 2-3 weeks, I mean, half of Metula is destroyed.
Physically
destroyed. Metula.
Who hasn't been there?
So what do you do? Do you build anew? Do you just... I mean, what do you do with those families?
Right.
And then the entire North is that. What do you do with the South and the grand plans and how fast can you, and do you just rehabilitate or do you create from new with a different vision so that we can bring a little bit more light and life to that area and not just bring it back to what it was? How do we expand it? So we give back a sense of hope and future for the residents of the periphery. And all of this, with a backdrop of a stable government that we all know there will be elections soon and what that looks like. And unfortunately, any plan that's required to be constructed at this point is a multi-year plan and needs a stable continuity of governance. And what do you do with that, my friend?
This is not exactly the area of...
I'm depressed again.
...of stable continuity.
I'm going to get an iced coffee.
Continuance of government. I don't know how much time you have, but...
Let's go.
You know, it was so amazing. And look, how many times have I been, again, in your company, and I don't take it for granted, and I've seen this before, but being there on my son and daughter-in-law's Aliyah prep as they were standing in Newark Airport, they're 30 lone soldiers. 30 lone... Now, I got to tell you something. I think back to the days when I was a teenager, and again, what teenage, especially man at that point yeah. in our lives, didn't think about, you know, when we spent time in Israel, how we need to go to the army, should go to the army, should we go, you know, all this stuff. And one thing I always assume is if, God forbid, there would have been a time of war at that time, I would have thought of every excuse not to go. And I'm watching these young men and women in Newark Airport, and I
love them.
Do you guys know that there are people going through basic training and then into the army who don't come home? Do they know that there are, you know, and they're putting themselves in this situation? And you meet these heroes on a regular basis.
They're unbelievable. I love them all.
Because every summer when we've seen them together, it was a level of commitment to be admired. But now?
When they came,
this is crazy now.
In the past, you would come. You would do basic training for how long? A year. You would be doing shmirah in some outpost in some kind of kibbutz. And so unless you really went into active combat, right. Unless you really trained. Now kids are coming. Kids. And within 3 months of basic training, they're in Gaza.
That's all you have to say.
That's it. It's fast-track training.
So everyone that I saw at that airport, by the time Sukkot is over, they're going to be stepping it up.
Yes. And that's very sobering. And just highlights just how heroic these kids are. How brave they are. And it really makes you feel very small.
Well, that I agree with. But I just, you know, sometimes you want to grab them by the collar and say...
Just hug them.
Do your parents know what you're doing?
Yes, they do.
Of course they do. But
I'm sure they got it from their parents. So you got to give them a hug.
I understand, but you know the line.
You can't be the parent.
But you know the line.
You got to be the cheerleader.
But you know the line. I always wanted my kid to be a Zionist, but not this much of a Zionist. I mean, come on.
Yeah, lowercase Z.
All right. What can I tell?
So that's what we should have, new t-shirts. Instead of the proud Zionist that your M'chutin Uri Polachowski, right. Rabbi Uri Polachowski puts out,
right.
You should have proud Zionist with a little lowercase z.
That's sufficient. That's sufficient.
Proud Zionist. So
the children don't go to the army. There's an explanation
for it. Two different types of,
exactly.
Different sizes.
They're
of like, Z's.
They're pseudo-Zionists. They're neo-Zionists.
Everyone's beautiful. We love everyone.
Oh, come on.
We need unity. We need achdut. So we're not judging any single soul.
Well, you had this gentleman that you spoke about is a member of Knesset, no?
Yes.
That was here today. So,
Mankali's not. He's not.
Oh, he's not?
Knesset. He's just director general. He's director general.
Did he have any feelings about the unity of the Jewish people?
Well, the minister of immigration absorption, Ophir Sofer, dear friend who you've interviewed and been traveling with for the last 2 years.
And my children were photographed with in the
Nefesh. A dear, dear friend. Yeah. Today, he announced that it's time for a unity government. And he called. As a minister of the current government, he said, Dykvo, enough. We have to have a unity government. The Jewish people needs it.
Have you heard any reaction to it by any members of government?
Oh, it's all over the press. Everyone's trying to gather what that means for a coalition.
Well, I would think the media would like that.
Oh, yeah, 100%. The moment I saw it, I sent him a text. Well, heart emoji and kol hakavod with 15 exclamation marks.
Well, I had a different theory. I had a theory you may have put the idea in his head.
No.
You had nothing to do with this.
He's a very, very decent human being.
No, 100%. But decent, doesn't always mean that you're calling for a unity government. But
it's something...
But you're saying that symbolically it's important, or that practically it could have real importance?
Both.
Really? It could be a practical change into the way things are...
I think things are so partisan constantly. And in a time of war and a time of pain, we cannot have any cynicism. We can't have a cynical approach to any decision that it's agendized for any partisan movement.
And that's happening all the time now.
100%. But if there is people who put Lego to the side, if that's even possible, and say, okay, we're doing this for the sake of the Jewish people, not for our own positions, and not for our own retention of seats, and we're willing to compromise and become vulnerable for the sake of the Jewish people, even though it might mean that my personal political future is at stake, then that will reduce the cynicism, allow there to be a rebuilding of faith and making decisions that are smart for the Jewish people.
I know that you've never shared any real, I mean, on purpose, to your credit, any real political views with us or with anybody, which is fine and to be respected. So I don't know if this...
And I just use those words very, very carefully if you know how I danced around that.
And I don't know if this is then out of bounds or not, but you could be honest with me and just say it is. But I'd love your analysis then of what you think when 200,000 people take to the streets demanding a hostage deal. Like, how do you view that when that happens? Or you'd prefer not to comment on it?
I prefer not to comment.
All right. And you generally don't comment on it?
I have never commented on anything political.
Even about whether there should be a hostage deal
for 22 years.
No, but I'm saying in this case, you've never...
Yes.
Like, it's not your responsibility?
It's not my responsibility, but Adarabha, just the opposite. On the contrary, my responsibility is that Nefesh is a house for every single Jew. And every single Jew from every political affiliation, from every denomination, has to feel that they are not judged, treated differently, welcomed and embraced the same. And therefore, not for a moment can anyone feel that I am presenting a political position so that every government can work with me.
Right.
Every party in the States. The State Department can work from Democrat to Republican.
Would you be upset if staff members attended a rally like that?
I do not get involved in
it. Meaning that people do what they want.
Do whatever you want. You're a person in person. Just don't raise a Nefesh flag either side of the thing.
And don't be quoted as a Nefesh flag spokesperson.
But of course you express yourself. Kol hakavod for expressing yourself. We have 150 people who are very passionate workers here, and they have diverse opinions. Right. And even in the halls of Nefesh, you'll find very diverse opinions on almost every political matter.
You'll find people here who serve in the military with opinions right to left, all over the place.
100%.
So we're not just talking about that, you know.
And religious differences here, affiliations, and from the gamut is being expressed within the halls, which is healthy because we're a family and we're able to express it in a respectful fashion.
So would this be fair? that you sympathize with the frustration of people who are...
I sympathize with every side. We're in a horrible position.
So you get those who
we're
demand...
We're in a horrible position. We're in a painful position. We're in a painful position. And that's all I can say.
No, I get it. No, what the reason I...
You're not getting any more.
No, I get that. But the reason I... And look, last week I spoke to Tzvi Yechezkeli, so you know how outspoken he is with... Mm-hmm. He blamed Sinwar for dividing the Jewish people. He blamed Sinwar for knowing that if he, as the chief terrorist, would behave a certain way, the Israeli people would react with division, unfortunately, with people at each other's, you know, wit's end as to how the future goes. And that's, I mean, again, not asking you to comment other than saying that's very sad. That's a shame that, you know, that the enemy has succeeded in doing that. Let's put it that way.
It's not, what I'm about to say is not a political maneuver, but more of an emotional position. I feel emotionally connected to both sides.
Right.
I understand.
You said this before. Right?
I understand the positions.
100%.
Really, we're in a no-win position. We're just in pain. And the question is how you triage and how you prioritize, and not prioritize,
how you implement a unity government might help.
No, I don't know. It's just I understand the pain and the complications of both. It is we're in a no win position. It's painful. It's tragic. We're in a tragic position. Again, I was just with someone from the Ministry of Defense last week, I think. And again, I said something stupid. How do you think the war will end, or when the war went? And he said the war was over October 7th. We lost the war October 7th. This is just recuperating post. And how do we save face? How do we rebuild? How do we bring our people home who are hostage? And how do we let our people go back to their homes? This is for us to recuperate after we lost the war on October 7th. And it was an incredible, I heard, this is the second time I heard someone from the Ministry of Defense, which was very good and very vulnerable for a person to share. But again, it puts into perspective. And that also has a lot of political implications of how you assess the current situation and the priorities that we're supposed to do. And with that.
But it's a takeoff on something that we've said many times since October 7th, that there are that there are military experts who say the moment the enemy infiltrates your land, the war is lost. Yeah. And sure enough, of course, we know where this
have citizens still held hostage. And it's almost Rosh Hashanah. It's heart-wrenching. And the fact that we have tens of thousands of people who have not returned home and starting the school year, not in their schools.
Again.
Just unfathomable.
Yeah. You're going to London.
Yes, I am. Let's go to a positive note. Yes.
This ain't going to be positive.
Oh, God.
When you went to the United States multiple times over the last year, you had the opportunity, we had the opportunity to speak with you about the general feeling in the U.S. that it's time for people to move. And you don't like, which I totally respect, discussing Aliyah from that perspective. And that's why you leave it to me to do that. And that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But do you think that there's more of an urgency in England, or we don't know?
I think for the last few years, there's been more of an urgency in England.
So no matter what we're feeling in New York, they're much further along.
Over the last 8-9 years, have been real, real attacks.
So that could be a theme of your visit there.
It's not going to be. It has to come and has to be generated from the communities themselves. They have to see it. I'll give them the bridge, but they have to cross that bridge.
And no matter what they're being subjected to, until they open up their eyes to that, they ain't crossing that bridge.
Yeah. So for some, we'll make it very easy or easier. But it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to hear and to learn and to go back to London. It's been a bunch of years. For us to go back to London is momentous because we used to operate in London and then the government started moving into London and we were asked to retreat. And for me personally, the London launch was a funny story because
funny turn of events.
Yeah, because I had a meeting with the Rabbi Sachs, Olav HaShalom, or Zatzal, and And then the next morning, he had an interview with Jerusalem Post, and the front page of Jerusalem Post was Rabbi Sacks welcomes Nefesh for Nefesh to England. And then they call me for a response. I was like, yeah, we're so excited. And that's surprise. how we started in London, in England. And it took me, my staff, and like our partners, like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I don't know. So that was it. So it's nice to go back because we've had a lot of overtures over the last few years of potential Olim from England reach out to us and saying, when are you coming back and how can you help? And it's just nice to be able to, for a certain ichlusia, for a certain audience, for a certain population of physicians to right. go back.
Was there ever a charter from England or just group flights? Group flights.
There was
one?
Of course. The three flights. Meaning? U.S. That one day that we had the three, that right. one 15 minutes that we had right. three charter flights land at the same time. That historic date.
U.S., U.K., and?
And Canada.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
It was really awesome.
And I assume you're on the U.S. flight?
Yeah, that was an awesome day.
They were celebrating at the same time in Tel Aviv.
We landed them at the same time.
That's unbelievable.
We were able to talk to our cell phones. We were all circling so that we would land right after each other. And we were able to talk from plane to plane on our cell phones because we were all in the same. We were all so flying
slow. What year is this?
2008,
is the video around?
Of course it is. The three-flight video. Go to YouTube.
I gotta watch that. That's unbelievable.
I can't even watch anymore. Everyone plays that all the time. You don't. And I have to tell you, I came out first. Then England. Or no, Canada, then England. I forgot the order. But I was on the... And Mamash, I was like, this is how it must feel like Yimot HaMashiach for Kibbutz Goliath. It was just plane. And then plane.
From different parts.
And then, yeah, and then another plane. I was like, just where's the fourth? And the fifth? And you felt it was just... I was so moved. I was bawling. It was so emotional. Plane after plane after plane. Within minutes. And it's just... And then we parked them all next to each other. At the big hangar, and we parked all three planes with their noses at the facing the hangar where we had the ceremony for all the three flights, and I was just looking at that. That was remarkable. That's a moment.
We ended on a positive note.
Yeah, that was beautiful.
Amazing.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank
Welcome.
You. Take care of my children now that they're in Jerusalem. Check in with them once in a while.
I just want you to know, yes, we will. I'm sure your mechutin will take care of them as well. So we please God, we are right. working with the engineer,
correct?
The Jerusalem engineer, the municipality engineer, to add more correct. Floors to our campus.
Because you need space for Nachum Segal.
100%. So part of a plan.
Can't
we're
wait.
We're building a studio, my friend.
Can't wait.
So it'll be a permanent home.
Bezrat Hashem.
For NSN.
Bezrat Hashem. Thank you for
Did
everything.
Did I say the initials right?
Yeah, of course.
I
said it. In my book, which they claim is going to be coming out soon,
oh.
the final picture in the book, I believe, I don't know exactly because I'd have to find out from the graphic artist, I believe the final picture in the book is you and me in the new NSN studio in New York.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. On that Friday afternoon when you came to visit. Right before the opening.
That was great.
Yeah.
Yafa.
Looking forward to the big ceremony here, Bezrat Hashem.
Amen. Amen. Ken Yehatzon. Thank you so much for this time. Thank you for being my psychologist.
I thought you were going to say partner.
No, this has been very healing. We came full circle, came in happy, depressed for 30 minutes, and then you healed me.
It's been our trend in the last few months.
I really think we should have a couch and whatever.
Listen to the interview you and I did in October. You'll be frightened.
I'm sure.
You'll be frightened. That was a rough one for everybody, but particularly for you, of course. Okay, let's see if we could find, obviously... Obviously.
What?
In fact, you'll introduce it, Rabbi Fass. You'll introduce it. It's so much to me. Let's see if we can find it in our database.
What are we doing?
We're finding your theme song.
Oh.
We're finding your theme song.
Thank you so much to Lenny Solomon for this theme song.
Ruining your public image. Here it is.
I really used to like it. Sorry, Lenny.
Well, Dove, I just called Avi Dove. Avi had a funny observation before. He said that he feels very bad for Lenny because Springsteen ripped him off.
Cute.
You like that?
People,
huh?
I think, listen to that more. Okay.
It could be.
Have a great day.
It is the official theme song for Rabbi Fass. at his appearances on JM in the AM, making Aliyah today. Solomon. Making Aliyah today. Information about Nefesh B'Nefesh. It's 866-4-ALIYAH. 866 the number 4 and then A-L-I-Y-A-H. Or go to nbn.org.il. Again, that's nbn.org.il. Simple as that.